Welcome, welcome everybody. And I'm not sure if people tried to get on and had some trouble. I'm not sure why. There was an initial lag of conflict of two meetings going on, but we are starting. And a couple of pieces of housekeeping. First, I'm going to spotlight my video. So if you have on the top right, go to gallery view, and that will change the spotlighted video. I'm also on a different computer today, so hopefully it will. Yeah, Judy, if you go into my office, you'll find my computer missing. Hopefully that will resolve our issue, at least for today. It's a temporary fix, and we're going to jump right in. There was a source page that, actually, let me share it. Let's put it in the chat. Okay. That's the source page for today. And if somebody wants to just keep an eye on that as people sign on, we can add it to the just keep posting it. All right. We're going to start right here. Okay. We spent the last couple of first couple of classes essentially discussing the background of Yehoshua and his relationship with Moshe. And so I want to kind of get a little bit, at least a couple of verses into the text of chapter one. Typically, when I teach a sefer, those of you who have taken courses of various Svarim and Tanakh with me over the course of in the past few years, typically in the first chapter, there's more to discuss than there is per chapter as we move through. So we'll spend a little bit more time here, but nonetheless, I want to at least make some headway. That's the verse that we spent time the last 2 weeks looking at. After the death of Moshe, God says to Yeshua ben Nun, who was the Mishoret Moshe, Moshe avdimet. Okay, a servant Dave Moshe has died, meaning it's now your turn. Ve'ata kum avor et ha'Yarden hazeh. It's time for you to cross over this Jordan River. Ata v'chol ha'am hazeh, you and all of the people. El ha'aretz asher nechinaten lahem livnei Yisrael. To the land which I give them to give to Bnei Yisrael. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread, I will give to you, kasher dibarti el Moshe, as I promised to Moshe. Me'amidbar ve'alavanon hazeh v'ad ha'nahar ha'gadol nahar prat. From this midbar. I have a hard time with this translation. They translate midbar as a wilderness. Maybe it is a translation of a wilderness, but in biblical terms, a midbar is not a wilderness. A wilderness in our mind is like the Sahara Desert is a wilderness, right? In Tanakh terms, that's called a shmama, where there's nothing. A midbar comes from the word lahadbir tzon, which is a grazing field for cattle. A midbar is an open field, open area, where there is vegetation for grazing land for flock. That's why it's lahadbir tzon comes from the same.
They're just simply trying to distinguish wilderness from desert. Wilderness at least have shrubs and something that basically grows in an occasional, source of water. That's why the translations have sort of settled on wilderness for Midbar. And no other reason.
Right.
It's
Yeah,
an
but it makes
English
sense.
peculiarity. It has got nothing to do with, that's all it means.
I'm
Because
not worried
otherwise.
about the translation. I just want to make sure we understand what it is. But anyway, in all
Okay.
cases, that's the notion of the Midbar and Livanon, which I'm assuming is a reference to what we call Lebanon or the area of Lebanon today. The Ad Nahar Hagadol Nahar Prat, all the way up to the great river of the Euphrates. Kol Eretz Hachitim, all the land of the Hittites. The Ad Hayam Hagadol. Until the great sea of the going down of the sun, which is of course the what we call the Mediterranean Sea, is the Yam HaGadol, Yegvulchem. That will be your border. Cross over the Jordan, and your boundaries will go from the Midbar all the way up to Lebanon, to the Euphrates, to the Mediterranean. Lo yitzev ish lefanecha kol yemei chayecha. No man shall stand before you, shall oppose you. Kashayiti Moshe yeimach, as I was with Moshe, I will be with you. Lo arpecha v'lo azvaka, I will not abandon you, I will not let you fail. Chazak ve'amatz, be strong, be courageous. Ki atah tanchil et ha'am hazeh et ha'aretz, you will enable this people to conquer and settle the land. The land asher nishbati la'avotam, latet lahem, the land I swore to give to, swore to their fathers to give to them. I'm going to skip the rest of the parak for now. I want to focus here at this moment. The primary message I want to come back to is verse 2. Moshe avdi met, v'yata kum avorat ha'yarden. Therefore now, get up, arise, and cross over the Jordan. It's a little bit of a lack of parallel here, because if Moshe avdi met, the next sentence logically should be, v'yata, therefore you now get up and lead this people forward. Right? You are taking over the role of Moshe. But instead, there was a more transactional statement, rather than an assignment of role, and we're going to talk about that in a second, kum avorat ha'yarden, cross over the Jordan. The borders we'll come to in a moment, why that is significant. But I want to focus first on this notion of crossing over the Jordan. Why was crossing the Jordan so significant an act that it was sort of the first act that Moshe, that Yeshua is defined, or that Yeshua is given to define his role, taking over from the leadership of Moshe? And it's not a complicated question to answer, but it's just fascinating. If we pay attention to this idea of crossing the Jordan as a symbol of that moment, of the first thing that Yeshua will do, let's go back to the story of Moshe himself. When Moshe was told in his final request to enter the land of Israel, and he was told no, I want to read through that text for a moment, in the beginning of Parashat Va'etchanan, Perek Gimel of Dvarim. Sorry. Va'etchanan el Hashem ba'et ahi lemor. I beseeched God, saying, Hashem Elokim, ata chilot larot et avdecha et kodlecha ve et yadcha chazaka, Hashem yehi b'shamayim uba'aretz asher yaseh ma'aseh v'chi gvuotecha. You, God, began to show your servant your greatness, your strong hand, began the conquest of the land, in the conquest of the land of Sichon, and the conquest of the land of Og, and your great deeds. Please let me cross over and see the good land that is on the other side of the Yarden. This great hill country and the Lebanon. So, how many requests does Moshe make of God in this sentence? Don't answer the question, just think about the question. How many requests does he make? God's answer, Vayit'aber Hashem bi lema'anchem, God was angry at me for your sake, v'lo shema elai, he didn't listen to me. V'yomar Hashem elai, rav lach, al tosef daber alai od b'davar zeh, don't talk to me again about this matter again. Alei rosh ha'pisgah, go up to the top of the hill, v'sai nechayam atzafon v'teman v'mizracha, take a look, westward, northward, southward, eastward, look around the entire area. And look with your eyes. You will not cross this Jordan. Command Yeshua, encourage him, strengthen him, for he will pass over before this people, pass over the Jordan. He will cause them to conquer the land, which you will just see. Okay, so how many requests did Moshe make, and of those requests, how many did God agree to or not agree to? It's a very subtle text, but it's very important. Moshe seems not to make one request, but rather two. If you listen carefully, He says, Ebrana ve'ereta aretz. I want to pass over the land, pass over the Jordan, and I want to see the land. To which God responds and says, Sa'inecha yamatzafona, take a look, ve'ebeinecha, look with your eyes, ki lo ta'avor et ha'yarden hazeh. But you will not cross over the Jordan into this land. That's Yeshua's role. I charted it out for you in the source page just so you can see it. In the first half, Moshe makes two requests, Ebrana, to cross over, Ve'ere, and to see the land. And God's answer to him is, you can see the land, that I'll let you. But you can't cross over the Jordan. You can see with your eyes, but you cannot cross over. And that's where he says to him, look, north, south, east, west, right? The boundaries, the borders of the land of Israel are not just on the west side of the Jordan River. He says to him, look north, look east, look west, and look south, right? Look in all directions. He's standing in Arvot Moav, but there's land to the north, land to the south, land to the east, land to the west. In all cases, take a look at the land, but you will not cross the Jordan. So I really want to address two questions today. Question number one is, what's the significance of crossing over the Jordan? Specifically, he can see the entire land, meaning north, south, east, and west and east, can see the entire land, but there's something about crossing over the Jordan which was specific that Moshe wanted to do, and God said no. And that was the role of Yeshua, to cross over the Jordan. So that's my first question. The question is exacerbated by the second question, which is, what is the significance of the Jordan River if the land of Israel borders, boundaries of the land, are so much larger than just the west side of the Jordan River? Right? If we go back to the Psukim, God says to Moshe, I'll give you wherever you go, wherever your sole of your feet to tread, that's where I will give you. And he traces the boundaries of the land from the Midbar to Lebanon to the Nahar HaGadol, which is the Euphrates, and all of Eretz Chittim, which is today Lebanon, all the way up to Turkey. Ayam HaGadol Bavo HaShemesh. Right, the boundaries, and this is not new. The language of this description of the boundaries of Israel is actually articulated in the Torah itself. The language here is actually borrowed almost verbatim from Sefer Dvarim. You have it in chapter 34, when Moshe is actually told, now is the time to fulfill that request to see the land. Vayal Moshe miavot ma valhar nevo rosh ha-pisgah, goes up to the top of the hill, and looks over opposite Jericho, Vayareyu Hashem et ha'aretz. God showed him the land and the Gilad all the way to
second.
The sorry about that.
Excuse me. Yeah. Last week when I was in Yerushalayim and I passed Rav Nisim's house where he had lived, there's a big sign, and I said, I have to talk about what I remember about him. He visited New York in around, it was either late 1968, early 1969.
Is relevant to the question here?
Yes.
Okay.
And this is right after the Six-Day War. No more than 2 years after, probably a year, year and a half. And he was asked by someone, what about the land we've now entered? Is
right.
it
okay.
is
I want to hold
holy?
That question. I understand. I want to hold the story
exactly
and the question.
That.
Okay.
He said exactly that.
I understand where you're going. I want
to
hold it because it's much bigger
say
than
it
that.
For him.
I understand. But it's much bigger than that. I understand what he's saying. It's much, much bigger than that. And the problem is even more significant because we're not just talking about the land, the West Bank that was referred to as Yudan Shimon. The borders that are described here are Kol Eretz Naphtali, which is today the area of Lebanon, Vet Eretz Ephraim Umenashe, Vet Kol Eretz Yehuda, Ad Hayam Acharon, Vet Hanegev, Vet Hakikar, Bikat Hayarden, Bikat Yericho.
Yam Acharon.
Right? Yam Acharon is the Mediterranean.
Yom HaKippur could also be the soldiers are in Ashkelon.
I'm sorry. I can't. Multiple voices don't work. Yom HaKippur can also be a reference to the Dead Sea or the Gulf.
Not the dead, but med.
Or the Yom Suf. But
Yom HaKippur is the med. Yom HaKadmoni is the dead.
But it's certainly not where I want to go, which is to the question of the Euphrates, and he shows him this land, and he says to him, "This is the land that I have promised to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, saying, Lizarachat nena, heticha be'enecha, you will see it, v'shama lo tavor. You can see it, but you can't go there. And that's the message to Moshe. You can see it, but you can't go there. And that's where Moshe dies. So the notion that he can't cross over the Jordan is emphasized here, but the fact that he can see the land. But seeing the land is much bigger than just the land west of the Jordan River. Seeing the land, if I go to Dvarim Yud Aleph, you will inherit land, conquer land of great nations, mightier than you. And this is the language from Yeshua. Kol makom, asher tidoch kaf rag lechem bo lechem neriyeh. Every place your feet will tread will be yours. Min ha-midbar ve-alvanon, min ha-nahar, nahar prat, ve-ad ha-yam ha-acharon, ye-gevuchem. From the Euphrates to the Mediterranean, from the north to the south. Lo yitzev ish bifnechem. No man shall stand before you. Pachtechem umorachem yiten Hashem alechem apne kol haaretz. Asher tidrachu bo. So there are two questions that are inherent in my, and that's why, I stopped you for a moment, because my question today isn't so much about the land between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River. My question of the biblical boundaries or borders of the land of Israel, what significance do they carry when the Torah and in the Yoshua, there's a constant emphasis on crossing over the Jordan? The borders of the land of Israel will go all the way up to the Euphrates, and the Bashan and the Golan and the Gilad, and why is the emphasis always crossing over the Jordan? Moshe was in the middle of the land. God says to him, look north, south, east, and west. Sorry, there's a little bit of background noise. I'm just going to put mute on, but you can unmute to participate. In all cases, Moshe is in the middle of the land of Israel, and yet he's told to cross he can't cross the Jordan, you can only see it. So there's two questions embedded in this discussion. One is, what are the boundaries, the borders that the Torah sets out for the land of Israel? Why are they so large, from the Euphrates to the Red Sea, to the Nile, from the Midbar HaGadol, Lavanon, all the way Eretz Achitim, great nations, right? There's a great, the land of Israel that he's describing here is much bigger than, right? This is Lebanon, this is Eretz Achitim, right? What is today Turkey is Mamlechet Achitim. You want to talk about from the Nile to the Euphrates and call it Eretz Achitim, you're talking about half the Middle East. This is an extraordinary, a very large piece of real estate. Moshe is sitting here, and God says to him, look, north, south, west, and east. But you can't cross the Jordan. So what's the significance of crossing the Jordan, and how do I navigate the boundary, the borders that are given to Abraham from the Nile to the Euphrates in the context of the significance of crossing over this tiny little river stream called the Jordan River? Everybody understand the question? All right. So,
What is the Yam HaGadol?
The Yam HaGadol is, this is the Yam HaGadol, the Mediterranean.
And the Yam Suf?
Yam Suf is down here, it's the Red Sea. That's not mentioned in these Pesukim. The Yam HaCharon, from the Har HaGadol to the Yam HaCharon, is probably from the Nile to the Mediterranean. The Yam Suf is further south. It's the southern, but the Nachal Mitzrayim is mentioned also in the borders. We'll get to the borders of the land of Israel in a moment, but the first question is, what is the difference between seeing and crossing over the Jordan? That's the question. So to answer this question, I want to start with a very powerful Medrash. And the Medrash appears in several places. It appears in Dvarim Rab, but also appears in a more accessible, concise form in Medrash Tanchuma. And the Medrash on these psukim in Vaschanan, where Moshe asks to see the land, or to cross over the land, into the land. And this is a part of the conversation. Amalo, kach alta b'machshava v'chein minagosh shel olam, dor dor v'doshav, dor dor panasav, dor dor manhigav. God says to Moshe, every generation has its leaders. Every generation has its expositors, its doresh, every generation has its Torah teachers, every generation has its leaders. Ad achshav yachal kachal shiret lefanai, achshav avad chal kachal v'gi yasha shil Yeshua tamid chal shiret. Now, up until this point, you were the leader, and now it's time for Yeshua to have that role. Amar lefanav, so Moshe said to God, Riboni, if that is the case, my master, if you're telling me that the reason I am to die here is because Yeshua has to lead the people, Elech ve'yela tamid. I don't have a problem with that. The most humble person in all of Anav Mikol Adam. Let him lead, and I'll just cross and go into the land of Israel. I'll go as a student. I'm not looking to go in as the leader of the Jewish people. I'm going to look to go in as a student. Amar lo, God said to him, okay, if that's the deal, im ata rotza lasot kach, lech aseh. If that's what you want, I'll let you do it. Go and be his student for a day. Let's see how that works. Amad Moshe v'ishkim lefitcho shel Yeshua. Which case Moshe went and he got up and he went knocking on the door of Yeshua and he says, okay, I'm here to sit in your shir and listen to your Torah. There's a whole piece here about standing and sitting. I skipped it for now. If you want, you can look it up. Amu Yisrael l'Moshe. Finally, the people came to Moshe and they said, Moshe, you're sitting here in the shir. Yeshua is teaching us Torah, but you're sitting here. Moshe Rabbeinu, Lamdeinu Torah. You teach us Torah. To which Moshe said, Ein li reshut. I don't have permission. This is now Yeshua's time to teach you. Amulo, they said to him, Ein lanu manichin otcha. We're not letting you go. Yatzdabat ko v'yamralim, to which a voice from heaven had came out and said, Limdum Yoshua, you learn from Yoshua. V'kablu alechem leshev v'lomod miYeshua, accept upon yourself to sit and listen to Yoshua. And that's what they did. Yeshav Yoshua barosh. So Yoshua sat at the head of the entourage. Umoshe bimino, and Moshe to his right side, right hand, as Yeshua had done all these years. Uvne Aharon mismolo. And Aharon Shulman on his left. Vaya Yeshua Yoshev v'toresh b'fnei Moshe. And now Yeshua was teaching the Torah to the people, and Moshe was sitting there as a Talmud. There's a whole piece here which I skipped as well. You're welcome to look it up. Finally, in exasperation, Riotasha Amr Moshe Ribbono Alamim, Ad Achshav Bikashti Chaim, Achshav Harei Nefshi Netunalach. God, up until this point, I requested life. Now I give you my soul. Meaning, what the Medrash is reflecting is what I think is at the core of the issue here, which is the Jordan River per se is not the issue. It's not about the boundaries or the borders of the land of Israel starting at the Jordan River. That's the Jordan River plays a role, but you have tribes on the east side of the Jordan and you have tribes on the west side of the Jordan. You have territory to the north and territory to the south. You're going to go all the way up to the Euphrates. The Nile River is insignificant. But what was significant about the Nile River was that it symbolized the beginning of the leadership of Israel that would begin the conquest. The first city to be conquered was Jericho. And whoever led the people across the Jordan River would start the campaign to settle the land of Israel. That process belonged to Yeshua as the leader. And it was about leadership. You can see the land, but to cross the Jordan is a terminology the Torah uses to describe who is going to be the leader of the army of Israel, of the people of Israel, who's going to lead that campaign. If it starts in the Jordan, if it'll go into Jericho, and then it'll go to Shechem, and then it'll go north, and then it'll go south, and then it'll go, and it'll expand. That's fine. But it starts here by crossing the river. And the first moment, it's about leadership. Moshe understood this. I don't think this Medrash is reflecting a conversation that actually happened. I think the Medrash is reflecting the message here, which is you can see the land. You've been standing in the land in a certain sense, but you can't lead them. You can't cross the Jordan into, because you can't be the leader to do so. Parnas echad lador ve'en shnei parnasim lador. You can have one leader, you can't have two. And so, which Usher maybe goes back to the question you asked me at the beginning about leadership. And so, right from the beginning, if you look at the phrase in Pasuk Bet of Yeshua, that's exactly the phrase that is used. Moshe avdi met, Moshe my servant has died, and therefore now, ata, doesn't say kum hanheg et ha'am, lead the people, God, right? Because Avorat HaYarden is what is meant by crossing the river, means to lead this army, to lead this people. That's exactly what God says to Moshe. You can't go. Go and tell Yeshua he's going to cross the Jordan with the people. And so that's the meaning, I think, of that phrase. Kum Avorat HaYarden, it's not about borders. It's about the beginning of the conquest of Israel, and it's about the status of who will lead the people. It'll be Yeshua and not Moshe. Therefore, Moshe avdi met, kum avor et ha'Yarden, cross the Jordan, and begin that process of leading the people, atav chol ha'am hazeh, because you are the new leader of the army and the people of Israel. That's part one of the conversation. Part two of the conversation is more complicated, because it says, right, if it comes back to the question that I asked before, and I think you were alluding to this too, if the Jordan River is so significant, why immediately Pasuk Gimel and Dalet turns to Yeshua and says, but don't think that the Jordan River is your boundary, is your border. You're crossing over the Jordan because that's how you're beginning the story. But the border, kol makom asher tidrach, wherever you go, מהמדבר והלבנון הזה, עד הנהר הגדול, נהר פרת, כל ארץ חיטים, ביד הים הגדול, מבוא השמש, right? You're talking about what seems to be a description of this area. From נהר פרת to נהר מצרים, the boundaries given to Abraham, הר המדבר הגדול, there's the המדבר הגדול, which is Jordan, parts of Saudi Arabia today, and all the way up to Lebanon and Mamlechet and Eretz Chittim. I mean, this is an extraordinarily large parcel of land to describe that as the borders. The significance of crossing the Jordan becomes so much more complicated. So I want to spend the time remaining today to address the question, or to begin to address the question, of what are the biblical borders of the land of Israel, and how and why is that significant for us? And what significance does it have for us if the promised land included, right, this enormous expanse, Me'anahar Gadol ad Me'amidbar v'alabanon ad Nahar Gadol? Everybody understand the question? Okay, we're sitting over here in opposite Yerushalayim, more or less, right here. This is where Yeshua is, right here in the land of Moab. And God says to him, oh, you know, cross the Jordan, but I'm going to give you all the land from the Euphrates to Eretz Achitim to Yam HaGadol to just enormous. The question is, what does that mean in this context?
But it says wherever they step on. If they didn't step in Eretz Achitim, they don't get it.
Yep.
And if they didn't step
possible.
In the path, they don't get it.
That is possible, except that come back to the psukim in Devarim Yud Aleph, which is the same psukim, right? The story in Devarim Yud Aleph, these psukim are taken from the description in Chumash, where God says to him, to Moshe, right? This is not to Yeshua, but this is to Moshe. Koma koma shit, Harish Hashem, where is it? Kim Shemot Yishmolet Kam Mitzvah Zot Asher Nachim Mitzvah Etchem La'asota. If you will observe the commandments and do what God has asked you to do, V'Harish Hashem Et Hagoyim Ha'Elam Milifnechem, God will remove great nations and mighty empires from before you. Kol Ha'Makom Asher Tidroch Kaf Raglechem Bo Lachem Yiyem Min HaMidbar HaLevanon Min HaNahar Prat V'Ad Hayam Achron Yekvuchem.
But again, the condition is that they have to step there. They have to be there. And if they're not there, they're not getting it.
So I don't think it's that simple. And I'll explain why I don't think it's that simple. I think there's a question of where do, let's hold off answering the question for now. I think it's more than just where you, if you go there, it's yours. I don't think anybody anticipated Yeshua to go to take the army of Israel and go and conquer Turkey today, modern Turkey. Right? There's not even a Havamina. Eretz Achitim. I just the notion that he
there's no such thing as Eretz Achitim. That is a myth.
I'm going to go there. It's a pasuk in the Torah. I'm not going to talk about.
No, it's not. Eretz Achitim is not Eretz Achitim. The pasuk talks about Eretz Achitim. The Chitim weren't in Turkey. That is a myth.
Okay. It doesn't matter. For my purposes, it does not matter. My point is, there is a let's go through the psukim. Okay, you want to go through the psukim? I'm not going to deal with the question of myths. Let's go through the psukim. Where are the borders of the land of Israel mentioned explicitly? And the reality is that they're mentioned in multiple places in the Chumash, but they're mentioned, right? And so let's take a look. Let's start at the Bereshit Perek Tetvav. I'm not worried about Turkey. It's not my issue. From the Har Gadol, from Nachum Mitzrayim to Nahar Prat is enough for me to ask the question: where are we and where are we going? If you take a look at Bereshit Perek Tetvav, which is the Brit that God makes with Avraham over the land of Israel, the Brit Ben Avtarim. I'm going to come back to this in a moment, again in a different context. But when God assures him that his children will go into exile and then they will return, Pasuk Yurchet. V'yomahu karat Hashem et Avram brit lemor. On that day, God made a brit with Avram, saying, Lezeracha netati et haaretz hazot min nahar Mitzrayim ad nahar agadol nahar prat. I give you this land from the river of Egypt, which is the Nile. Everybody agrees to that. To the Euphrates, everybody agrees to that. Et hakeni v'et haknizi v'et hakadmoni v'et hachiti v'et haprizi v'et harefaim v'et haemori v'et haknaani v'et hagirgashi v'et hayevusi. There are not seven nations listed here. There are 10. And the land that is promised to Abraham is the land of 10 nations in regions. This is essentially, if I look at this map again, I have from Nachal Mitzrayim down here to Nahar Prat over here. I have Eretz B'nai Kedem is in Jordan today, probably parts of Syria, maybe part of Iraq. Eretz B'nai Kedem. Eretz Rephaim is certainly in Syria, Eretz Emim, all of these nations, Nachal Mitzrayim until Nahar Prat. So this region here, I'm a little bit concerned. Okay, let's see if this works. This region here from the Euphrates, Eretz Bnei Kedem, Amidbar Hagadol, probably includes Nahar Hagadol, so Amidbar Hagadol. So all the way around like this. Are we suggesting that that's the boundary, the borders of the land of Israel? That's
what it seems. Where is the Euphrates?
This is the Euphrates.
No, today.
This is the Euphrates today. Nahar Prat, right here. That is the Euphrates. This is Bavel. This is Shinar. Right. This is modern day Iran. This is the Euphrates.
Oh, Iraq. Is it Iraq?
Iraq is over here. Yeah, this is Iraq. Okay. Shushan. This is all. So, I mean, I could superimpose a modern map on top of it, but oops. Sorry about that. Now I have to figure out how to erase that. Sorry. I don't know how to erase that.
Wet wipes.
It's not letting me erase it. Okay. Oh, well. Just gives me.
We'll pretend it's a scribble of a grandchild. We're good.
Yeah, no problem. I'll solve the problem this way. All right. There's always more than one way to do it. All right. So that's part of the question, right? So what is the significance of crossing the Jordan when God promises Abraham, however you draw the borders, if we're talking about Nachal Mitzrayim to Nahar Prat, we're talking about an enormous piece of land with not just seven nations, but 10 nations. Nations that are described as Amim Gdolim V'Chazakim Imcha. Nations that are greater and stronger than you. We're not talking about the little city states of Lachish and Devir and Yerushalayim and the Givonim. We're talking about major empires that were promised. V'yirishtem Goyim Gdolim V'Atzumim Mikem. So that's part of the problem. And multiple places where the borders of the land of Israel are mentioned, we have this description from the Nile to the Euphrates. Breshit Tetvav, I showed you, is one example. Another example, actually I charted this all out for you, so you have it, which is all in, go back to that in a minute. This is a list of all the verses in Chumash, where the borders of the land of Israel are mentioned. So Breshit Tetvav I just describes from Nahar Mitzrayim at Nahar Gadol, from the Nile to the Euphrates. Similarly, in Shemot Perak Chav Gimel, you have a description of God says, V'shilachti tatziv alefanech, I will send my hornet before you, meaning I will scare the nations away and they will go and run away from you. And I will cause to run away from you Achivi, Vaknani, Vachiti, all the nations of the region. But not all at once. Shafti et gvucha mi yam suf, v'ad yam plishtim, umi midbar ad anahar. And I will spread out your borders from the Red Sea to the Yam Plishtim, which is the Mediterranean, until the midbar ad anahar. And again, the nahar is always to the Euphrates. Similarly, in Devarim Perak Aleph, you have a description of the borders of the land of Israel as Eretz Haknani v'Halvanon ad Anahar Agadol Nahar Prat. All of the land, Knan and Levanon and the Nahar Agadol, all the way up to the Euphrates. Re'en etati lifnechem et ha'aretz, I've given this land to you. Reshut ha'aretz, go and inherit the land. In Devarim Perak Zion, similarly, Nashal goyim rabim mipenecha, I will remove great nations before you, because God will bring you into the land. All of the great nations of the region that will, nations that are bigger and stronger than you, I will remove them from before you. Then Dvarim Yud Aleph is the pasuk, the psukim that I read before about kol makom asher tidroch kaf raglechem. So even though in those two references, whatever I mentioned before, it was conditional, you have to go there, but the other references, it doesn't describe them as conditional. It describes them as the great promise of the land of Israel, or the great promise of a land that God will give to your children from the Nile to the Euphrates, which is where the expression comes from. Part one. Part two, however, is that we have a very different description of the very same land and the very same promise, but with much more limited scope borders. And one of the great mysteries in the discussion, both halachic discussion and philosophic discussion of the borders of the land of Israel, is how to navigate these two descriptions of the land itself. So, for example, taking a very interesting place, we refer to the land as Eretz Canaan, right? Where God promised Jewish people, I will give to you the land of Canaan. If you look at Bamidbar Lamed Dalid, Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, God says to Moshe, Tzavet Bnei Yisrael, go command Bnei Yisrael, and say to them, Ki atem ba'im el ha'aretz Canaan, you are coming into the land of Canaan. Zot ha'aretz asher tipol lachem b'nechala, this is the land that I am giving you as an inheritance. So I would assume that this is the same land, right? We have this promise of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates, and here God says to them, okay, now before you even get there, let's divide it up amongst the tribes. Here is the land that you will divide up, Eretz Canaan l'gvuloteha, Eretz Canaan in its borders. What are the borders of the land of Canaan? So the southern border, this gets a little complex, but you have a southern border, Pa'at Negev, which is Midbar Tzin, near Edom. Then you have Pasuk Vav, you have a Gvul Yam, you have the sea, the Mediterranean, as the western border. And then you have the northern border, Gvul Tzafon, is described in Pasuk Zayin, V'zei Yelechem Gvul Tzafon Min Hayam HaGadol, Titta'ulachem Hor Hahar. The border will go up to a place called Mount Hor, or Mount Har, Hor Hahar. Okay? What that is a mystery, but that's the northern border of the land of Israel, and there it'll go to Levo Chamat, and from Levo Chamat, it will start to head south, and what is the eastern border? V'zei Yelechem Gvul Kedma, down from Chatzitzon Enan, etc., the Gvul will go southward to the edge of the Kinneret, Al Katef Yam Kinneret Kedma, and the Yerada Gvul HaYardena, the Jordan River, will be the border, and it will go down to Yam HaMelech. So the borders here are very, very specific. And this is the land that will be given to the 2.5, to the 7.5 tribes, right? 9.5 tribes on the west side of the Jordan, because 2.5 tribes already received their portion, Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh, on the east side of the Jordan. But the west side of the Jordan, the boundaries of the land of Israel, more or less follow from the southern area, which is the area of Yam HaMelech, Nachal Mitzrayim, in this case, is probably maybe the Nile, maybe a little bit further north than the Nile, but it'll go from this Kadesh Barnea border up to the northern border, Levo Chamat, there's some discussion as to where that is. But that is certainly significantly smaller, this area, and the eastern border outside of the 2.5 tribes is the Jordan River. Ketef Yam Kineret. This area here, which is much smaller than this area here, Eretz Kanan leGvulotecha, is defined back in Breishit as the land of. Actually, I'll show you that reference as well. I'm not sure I put it in the chart. Did I put it in the chart? Yes. Breishit Perek Yud. You have the land of Israel, the land of Canaan, Gvula Kanaani, Mitzidon, from Sidon in Lebanon today, Boacha Gerara, all the way down to Gerar, which is near Aza. And then it turns to Stom Va'amora, which is the Jordan River Valley. That's a much smaller piece of land. And that's the land that God says, I will give you, this is the land you're inheriting, Eretz Canaan, Gvula Teh. So that's part of the challenge. Wherever that larger borders are, they're less defined, but I have two very distinct descriptions of the land of Israel, of the promised land. What is referred to as the smaller borders, which is Eretz Canaan. And Eretz Canaan is a box. That box, more or less, we can describe it as the box from Tzor or Tzidon down through the Euphrates, down through Eilat, across to Nachal Mitzrayim, which is probably further north than the Nile. That's more or less this space here is Eretz Canaan. That's the land that is promised. Or are we talking about from the Nile to the Euphrates, which is an extraordinary expanse of land? Right? So what is the borders of the land of Israel? And why is crossing the Jordan, therefore, so significant if, in fact, the borders are so much bigger? I shared with you before the notion that the Brit that God makes with Abraham, let's go back to that one second. Other direction. The Brit that God made with Abraham at the Brit Ben Abtarim was a Brit over, talked about Egypt, the slavery or going into a foreign land for 400 years. And then it talked about giving your children, your seed, this land, Minahar Mitzrayim ad Nahar Agadon Nahar Prat, from the Nile to the Euphrates. Right? You understand that Nahar Mitzrayim is different than Nachal Mitzrayim. I just want to make sure you understand that. Nahar Mitzrayim is the Nile, from Nile to the Euphrates. But if we're talking about a Brit with God over the land of Nile to the Euphrates, between God and Abraham, two chapters later, God makes a second Brit with Abraham. A Brit over Brit Milah. And what's interesting about that Brit is, and we sometimes miss this piece of the story, you know, you missed the translation, and I can't get the translation on the same page, so let me do it in here. Breshit Yud Zayin. Right? And here God again comes to Avram and he says, I'm going to make a brit with you, betna briti ben yu benecha, just as we had a brit by the brit ben abtarim. I will multiply you, I will make you a great nation. God, and part of that is a requirement of Avram ongoyim netaticha, I will make you a multitude of nations, v'efreit yotcha, I will multiply you, great ni netaticha legayim, umulachim imcha yetzeyo, you will have nations and kings. But there's a brit, there's a contract. And that contract includes the mitzvah of brit milah. But before we get there, our half of the bargain is a commitment to the mitzvah of brit milah. That's pasuk yud. Zot briti asher tishmenu b'ni u'v'nechem, himolachem kol zachar. What's God's half of the brit? Pasuk chet, v'natati lecha, ulezaracha acharecha, et eretz megurecha, the land in which you sojourn. Abraham didn't live between the Nile and the Euphrates. Abraham lived at kol eretz Kna'an, la'achuzat olam, the land of Kna'an as an inheritance. That is a much smaller piece of land. So even God's grit with Avram, on the one place he talks about the land where you live, which is Eretz Canaan, and two chapters earlier he talked about Minahar Mitzrayim, Yad Nahar Agadon, Nahar Prat. This is the mystery. Are we talking about a border that looks like, well, even if it looks like this, that's already the maximalist's perspective. Right? But are we looking at a border that looks like this? Which is more or less, right? Eretz Naphtali and Asher Naphtali is in what is today known as Lebanon. But okay, it's slightly larger than what we have today. Or are we talking about a border that looks like this? Which makes no sense from that perspective. But I have both texts in Tanakh. So what do I do with this? So you can understand that this is a challenge, not just to understand one verse or one text or one source, but this is a broader philosophical challenge to understand what are the promised, quote-unquote, biblical borders of the land of Israel. Do they expand into Nile to the Euphrates, or are they contained to what is referred to as Eretz Canaan l'gvulotah, the borders of the land of Canaan, the ancient land of Canaan? So there are many approaches to this question. There are halachic questions. There is the suggestion that the Rambam puts forward, which I've given you earlier in a source. The Rambam writes in one place that the land of Israel that we are describing as Eretz Yisrael, which is a land that was conquered by a king or a Navi or the majority of Israel, that's referred to as Kibush Rabim. That's the story of Yeshua and the Malchut Yisrael and David. Aval yachid mi Yisrael o mishpacha o shevet shalchu v'kavshu la'atzman makom afilu min ha'aretz shenitna la'Avraham. But there's a much bigger border of the land of Israel. And if a tribe or a family or even a leader of Israel goes and he settles or conquers that part of the border, the broader expanse of the land, it's not technically the land of Israel. It has certain legal status, certain technical rules. A part of the kedusha of the land of Israel may apply, but it's not completely the land of Israel, because it's outside of the borders of Eretz Canaan. What do we do with this? Why is it significant? So amongst all of the answers that I've seen over the years, I want to share with you one that I think puts the contemporary argument or the contemporary challenge of the question of the boundaries of the land of Israel into a very unique perspective. And I want to come back to, actually, you know what? After this, I don't even need to share. I'm going to leave this map up here for a second. I'll come back to the question of, was there ever an intent that the Jewish people would be given or would conquer or would have in some sort of a messianic vision a land, a malchus, that would span from the Nile to the Euphrates? Is that really ever realistic? So Rav Yoel ben Nun, somebody quoted Rav Yoel ben Nun earlier at the beginning of this year, Rav Yoel ben Nun has an article on this question, and he has a very interesting observation, fascinating observation, textual observation. Why am I here? Okay, let's go back to this chart here. Every single place in which the broader, larger expanse of land that goes from the Nile to the Euphrates is listed, you'll find it's listed or described in a very generic term. It's not called Eretz Canaan. Eretz Canaan is but one part of it. It's Eretz Canaan and Lebanon all the way to Nahar HaGadol, Nahar Prat. It's referred to over and over again as the land. Haaretz. Brit Ben Abtarim, God says to him, he makes a brit with Abraham, and he says to him, to your seed I will give this land. Zorecha natati et haaretz hazot. Which land? From the Nile to the Euphrates. Doesn't call it Eretz Canaan. He calls it the land. Similarly, in Dvarim, Eretz, Re'e Netati Lifnechem et Ha'aretz, the land. Bo Rishu et Ha'aretz, come and settle the land. God will bring you into the land of all of these nations. Whereas, wherever the minimalist borders are mentioned, whether they be the description of the Brit Milah, I will give you the land in which you sojourn. Right? I will give you Natati Lecha Lezarecha Acharechat Eretz Migurecha, the place where you live, which is not the Aretz from the Nile to the Euphrates. You live, it's called Eretz Canaan. You live in the land of Canaan. And so the land of Canaan has a border. Ani Hashem Elokechem Asher Hotzeiti Etchem Me'eretz Mitzrayim Latet Lachem Et Eretz Canaan Liot Lachem L'Elokim. I took you out of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan, to bring you into the land of Canaan. I didn't take you out of Egypt to live in the land between the Nile and the Euphrates. I brought you out of Egypt to live in the land of Canaan. When you divide up the land by tribes, you're dividing up the land of Eretz Canaan. Zot ha'aretz asher tipol lachem b'nachala, Eretz Canaan l'gvulotah. So Eretz Canaan is a box. It's a very contained and very defined box. The land from the Nile to the Euphrates is a very amorphous, undefined territorial world. I come back to the question I asked, which is if the boundary, this is already given to God and Reuven. If the border of the land of Israel is, I don't like this map. Let's look this map. What happened? All right. If the border is the land of Israel that I've given to you is from here, Nachal Mitzrayim, to Tzor, Tzidon, Lebanon, here, a little bit further north. If this is the box, I understand the significance of crossing the Jordan. Whereas if this is the box, then there's no significance to crossing the Jordan River. So what is it? See, here's Raviola's theory. And I think it's fascinating because I think it speaks to the address of all of the sources together, which is that when you talk about where the Jewish people will live, the land that they will live in is the land that was promised to them as the land of Eretz Megurecha, the land in which Avraham lived. And that land is Eretz Canaan, the Gvulotah. It's the borders and the boundaries of the land of Canaan. That's the land that God has given them. From the Jordan River, you turn westward, a little bit south, a little bit north. That's the land of Israel. The tribes on the east side of the Jordan, now the tribes on the west side of the Jordan. That's the land of Canaan. Eretz Sdom Amora, which was on the east side of the Jordan, became Ammon and Moab, and now you have the land of the seven nations of Canaan. Rashi's, you're familiar with this issue because you're all familiar with Rashi. Rashi famously says that the land of Canaan is the land that we get in this world, but Bimot HaMashiach will expand into the, not the seven nations, but the ten nations, which will take us all the way to the Euphrates. So what Raviola suggests is that it's not about a messianic dream in which the Jewish people are going to live in a expanded boundaries of the land of Israel that's going to take up the equivalent of half the Middle East. What he says is, and this is really remarkable, that this is the land that has Kedusha, this is the land that has Segula, this is the land that has the relation, the history between God and Israel, in this part, this box, right? This is the land in which we live, in which we are, our spiritual center and our spiritual relationship with God is anchored, but not contained. The spiritual message of the Jewish people and the message we convey to the world and the message that God mission mandate that God gave to Avraham, which is to be an Or LaGoyim, to be a great nation, and the nations of the world will be blessed through you. The notion that we are mandated to influence humanity, that's the purpose of defining the broader region of the area. The broader region of the area is not the land in which we live, but the land in which we will influence, spread out our message. The land in which the Jewish people in Eretz Canaan, Malchut Yisrael in Eretz Canaan, will be able to play a role and shape the destiny of humanity. That requires a focus that takes us, this is the area from Egypt to the Euphrates, which is basically in an idiomatic way of saying from Egypt to Bavel, the entire Middle East is the arena in which the Jewish people from the land of Canaan will become a force of history. So this is not the area in which the borders of the land of Israel are defined. This is the area in which the influence of the land of Israel and the people of Israel and the nation of Israel is defined. The borders are smaller. The borders are contained into Eretz Canaan. That's Malchut Yisrael. But once we've conquered the land of Israel, once we've settled the land of Israel, once we've established Malchut Yisrael, once we've established the nation of Israel, the people of Israel, then the challenge becomes, where is our message to go outward towards? And the message is to go out into a broader scope or broader world, which in biblical terms is a way of saying the message is to go from the Nile to the Euphrates. The influence is to be over the entire civilized world at the time, which is essentially, if you take out Europe, which is essentially from Egypt to Mesopotamia. And that's the area in which we are to live, not because that's the borders of the land of Israel, but because that's the borders of the influence of humanity in which we as a nation are to play a role. But the borders, Yeshua, take your people, cross the Jordan, begin the long journey in the land of Canaan, and from there your influence will emerge and expand into the entire land of Israel. That's essentially a summary of Rav Yoel's piece. You can find it on his website. I do believe it might have been translated into English at this point, but Rav Yoel has a website in which most of his articles are available. But I think it just helps us understand not only this contradiction in the text in Chumash, but really the role of Yeshua. The role of Sefer Yeshua is to begin the process of bringing the Jewish people into the box we call Eretz Canaan. The broader boundaries, borders of the land of Israel. That's why it says, Komakom Shetitroch Kafangachem, somebody mentioned before, right? We haven't gotten there. I think it's more than we haven't gotten there. That's not a land to conquer, that's a land to influence. If you want to have a message that's going to influence humanity, that civilization sits. This is before the internet, and before telephones, and before newspapers, and before media, and before computers, and before where you could say something here and it could be heard across the globe. But in the ancient world, your influence was regional, geographically regional. And so in the land of Canaan, that geography, that influence begins to expand and place its impact on the region as a whole, from Egypt to Mesopotamia. That's how I understand the piece, and I hope that has been helpful to you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
No problem at all. I hope that has been helpful. Sorry if I cut people off in the middle. I just I knew our time was limited, and I didn't want to and take us into too many tangents. So I appreciate your patience with me, and happy to explore questions that you might have at this point.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Shulman.
My pleasure. My pleasure. All right.
The whole issue of Shemitah, I guess this was also post 67, became very big, because once you had, we were growing things in what was became questionable, you know, did it count as having the same laws of Shemitah or not? Or
there's a separate issue.
I remember these things and I've been in Israel since 1970.
Right, right. But what you're addressing is a different issue altogether, but a relevant issue, which is within the land of Canaan, there are areas that had first sanctity from the days of Yeshua that the Jews in the time of Babel didn't go back to, and so did they have sanctity for the laws of Shemitah? Sanctity for the laws of Shemitah is different from the borders or the boundaries of the land of Israel. Right? That gets a little bit more of a specific. You have the issue of whether areas down as far south as Eilat, or possibly in areas of Gaza, was that part of Ole Bavel. Those are relevant questions, but they're relevant to the question of the stories in Yoshua and the borders and the boundaries and the cities that they came back to after the time of Bavel. Less so to the question of the border, of the broader biblical boundaries or borders of the land of Israel. And so, because all of these that you're describing is within the context of what I would call the smaller box of Eretz Canaan. The bigger question for that I tried to address here was, how does that region fit into the context of the broader description of from the Nile to the Euphrates? Is that some messianic vision that the world will become, the whole Jewish people will take over the whole Middle East? I don't think so, even though that's what Rashi seems to imply. I think that the answer lies more or less along the lines that we described earlier, which is that that's the center of civilization in which we live and therefore influence. The implication for modern times is very powerful, right? Because all of the efforts to bring about a regional a relationship with the neighbors in the Middle East, I think fits into this description of the Jewish people having an influence and a role to play in the region of the world. iPad Toronto, I'm not sure who that is, but they've got a hand raised.
It is me. I understand what you're saying about the box versus the bigger thing and the sphere of influence, as we call it today. So did it? In other words, the fact that Christianity, which stemmed from Judaism, influenced Rome and Europe, I understand, but that's not the box. The fact that Judaism influenced Saudi Arabia and Islam, that is part of the box. But the fact that we have scholars today who said that in Iraq, in Zoroastrian influenced us, maybe that's outside the box. Maybe it isn't, if you assume that the scholars are right about that. But so from your point of view, did it influence, and in what way? What are the concrete examples of that influence? They weren't monotheistic till much later.
I'm not. You're assuming influence means, the Yeshayahu's vision of Or LaGoyim. I'm not sure even that's.
But I'm left it open as a question to you. What do you think was that influence, and was it fulfilled?
Whether it's fulfilled or not, I don't know. History hasn't completed yet. But I think the concept of influence means that we as a nation interface with the region. This is the region in which we interface. Now, that interface can be negative. That interface can be positive. And that interface can be a function the region in which we live.
But now you're sounding like my local MPP who says, and I met with the Turks, and they're wonderful people, and I met with the Greeks, and they're wonderful people, and I met with the Italians, and they're wonderful people. Everybody who has a land influences and is influenced by their region. There's no chiddush in that. That's just being flesh and blood.
Yeah, the chiddush is that history hasn't finished the story yet, but I think that's the message in the Torah, is that you're from the land of Israel. You, whatever contribution to humanity you're going to make from a platform called Malchut Yisrael. And the region that you will engage with in biblical terms is geographic, because there's no other way to describe it. But I think in modern history, that region becomes much bigger because the world has become much smaller. Right? We don't have a geographic limitation to our the message or the conversation or the interface, because the entire world has become one big village. So I think it's less relevant today. Right? Jewish people's influence or role or to play in history can be felt in New York City in a rectangular building on the FDR, as much as it can be felt in the region in the Middle East. That's because the world has changed. Right? I'm not sure that I would translate it into a political message of contemporary nature.
Philosophic, sociological, yeah. But I want to know what you think are the concrete examples of that.
I'd have to give that some thought.
Okay, that's fair enough. Thank you.
But to the extent that the message of Jewish history and the Nevi'im messages that people take positively. It's a positive influence. The message that the Jewish people, that the world civilization sees Jewish people as a threat, anti-Semitism, then, you know, there becomes a negative.
I know. Our influence is, you mean I get to, you're objecting right back? You know, that's, I think that's, you know, most of the world would view it as a negative influence. You fought back against people who bomb you and kill you. Right. What kind of a cockeyed?
I try very hard because I think it can be taken in all directions. I try very hard to avoid the, application of biblical study to contemporary politics.
Fair enough.
People try to do that. It's very common. But I try to avoid it just because I think you can take any, depending on your particular political view, you could go in either direction.
Fair enough.
And so try to take Tanakh at face value and leave the rest of it for another time. All right, folks, have a wonderful day, and we will see you all, B'ezrat Hashem, next week.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.